The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So we've been spending the day primarily with mindfulness practice, exploring what it means to be awake to all of our experience, the entirety of our experience. And sometimes this exploration, in particular, I wasn't so much focusing on staying with one experience, but really holding that very lightly and allowing other experience to be known when it arises. And so this can sometimes bring up the question of what's the relationship between mindfulness and concentration, and how do they support each other? And so I thought I'd talk about that today a little bit, to explore mindfulness, what mindfulness is, and what concentration is, and how they support each other, the different ways that they support each other. So mindfulness as a quality of mind, I think of it as the factor of mind or the capacity of mind that allows us to know what's happening while it's happening. So it's a self-reflective capacity of mind. Pretty much anything that's happening in the present moment, we can either be lost in and just kind of, you know, like with thoughts or emotions, we can be lost in them, not aware of them. And we can also recognize, oh, this is something that's happening right now. There is anger arising right now in the present moment. And so that's the capacity of mindfulness, the capacity to know experience in the present moment as experience in the present moment. And there's a distinction between that and, you know, for instance, like with anger, for instance, you know, if somebody's angry, you might ask them, well, do you know you're angry? And it's like, well, yeah, of course I know I'm angry. But there may not be that recognition that this is, that the anger is simply something that's happening in the present moment, a kind of an impersonal phenomenon that's happening in the present moment. Somebody may know that they're angry, but be caught in the anger, be driven by the anger, be acting out of the anger. So mindfulness is this self-reflective capacity. And in some ways, I think this capacity of mind is one of the things that makes us particularly human, this ability to be aware of what's happening while it's happening. It's kind of like having a reflection, having a mirror up, that we can know what's happening while it's happening. And so this is the quality of mind. Actually, I think the Buddha was a genius for pointing out, you know, this quality is really helpful. You know, this is a really supportive quality of mind, and this is one to cultivate. I mean, because it's so almost obvious in a way, or it's so, I mean, it's not obvious that it's helpful so much, but it's a quality that is so just kind of a part of our minds that very few of us would think to highlight that quality as being something valuable. This quality to know what's happening while it's happening. It's something we more take for granted, or something we take as something to further our agendas. You know, we become aware of something happening in the present moment. Somebody's doing something, for instance, and we become aware of that, and we become aware that we're angry or frustrated about that. And what we think we need to do is to tell the person, you know, you're doing this thing and it's making me angry or frustrated and you should stop that, or you should fix this or change that. And so we become aware of things that are happening in the present moment, but don't stop to actually take stock of the knowing itself. Instead, we kind of habitually from the time we're very young, use that capacity to further our agendas, to further our doing what we do. You know, a simple example, you know, you may become aware when you're walking across a floor that there's a piece of trash on the floor. So you know, you see it, you know it's there, but there's not the kind of conscious recognition seeing is happening. Rather, instead, we see this thing and we stoop to pick it up. Not to say that you shouldn't stoop to pick up trash on the floor, but the actual recognition of something has happened there. I've become aware in the present moment. And that is actually an amazing quality of mind. I think it took the brilliance of the Buddha to really point that out to us. On the surface of it, it may not seem like such an amazing quality of mind, just the simple capacity to know what's happening while it's happening. And yet it really begins to uncover and reveal for us when we're willing to open to, for instance, oh, anger's arising in the present moment, as opposed to, oh, there's anger, what do I need to do about it? How can I fix this or change it? But to really take in the awareness of the state of mind. As we explore that, the mindfulness of that state begins to point out to us, begins to reveal to us the kind of ways in which that experience catches us or has us caught in its grip. And with the seeing of it, when we're not aware of a state, for instance, like anger, when we're not mindful of it, when we just notice it and say, oh, I'm angry, I need to do something about it, when we're not conscious of that, oh, anger's arising in the present moment, the anger, the pattern, the habitual tendencies around anger are playing themselves out. We're acting out of that state of mind. We're perpetuating ideas, beliefs, thoughts around that state of mind, essentially conditioning more anger in our minds. When we become mindful of it, and for myself, this was like a huge aha moment in my life when I was early in my practice, just the first couple months of practice, and anger was I often use anger as an example because it was such a huge part of particularly my early days of practice. And, you know, opening to recognizing, I had a kind of a dedication to myself. I'm going to be aware when anger happens. And as I did that, I mean, it was like a mind-blowing shock that when I was angry, it felt really bad. You know that before I had been aware of the anger as something happening here, like the instructions I was offering you about, you know, pretend like you're an alien taking up residence in this body, a being from another planet. And what is the experience? What does it feel like when a human being feels anger? It doesn't feel very good. It's painful. And it was a shock to me that it was painful. Before I had turned towards mindfulness of that state of mind, my mind had been consumed or projecting to the person that I was angry with. And in particular, you know, something along the lines of, well, that person's going to be really miserable that I'm angry at them. You know, so some kind of satisfaction, my mind was creating some kind of satisfaction that the person I was angry at would be miserable because I was angry. which was actually, I mean, this was part of how I got to see this, because I was in the Peace Corps. I was 7,000 miles away from the person I was angry with. And, you know, that delusion of that person's going to be really miserable. It's like, that person doesn't even know I'm angry. I have no clue I'm angry. And yet I was miserable. So this is part of the benefit of mindfulness. It begins to educate the mind and the heart as to where the suffering really is in some of these mind states, in some of these tight-held mind states. It also begins to educate the mind in terms of the beauty of other mind states, of love, of compassion, of generosity, of how the heart feels open and relaxed and connected with some of these non-tight or non-gripped qualities of mind. And the heart, with mindfulness, begins to, in a visceral way, in a felt way, begin to understand these kinds of states of mind lead me to suffering, and these states of mind lead towards well-being. So mindfulness is an amazing, amazing quality of mind. I continue to be stunned at the power of mindfulness. That power grows as the mindfulness gets more continuous. The power of mindfulness gets stronger. The possibility, the capacity for mindfulness to, essentially, there's a phrase in, I believe it's in Tibetan Buddhism, that when we bring a kind of the power of mindfulness to our difficult states, that they self-liberate. That anger seen with that power of mindfulness simply cannot take root. It withers, it vanishes. With that strength of mindfulness that comes with continuity. And my own practice, I just I'm continually getting blown away, even in the last few months, of just how powerful this tool is, this state of mind. Now, that continuity of mindfulness, when I say continuity, what I mean is that the factor of being aware of what's happening in the moment is sustained over time. So moment after moment, we know this is what's happening now. This is what's happening now. Underneath the level of concept, this direct, I mentioned the sutta where the Buddha said, in the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed, and the cognized is only the cognized. This kind of mindfulness, moment after moment, knowing what's seen, knowing what's heard, knowing what's felt, knowing what's in the mind, just moment after moment, a kind of a continuity, a kind of a pulling along of that capacity to be present. So that's what I mean by a continuity of mindfulness. That continuity of mindfulness is concentration. So this is where the power of mindfulness comes, is when that sustained connection with the present moment is happening over time. And so this is the joining of mindfulness and concentration. Essentially, one definition of concentration might be the meeting of experience in the present moment over a period of time. And this happens for us. I mean, the most common way that this happens for us, this sustaining of attention in the present moment, or the most, let's say, familiar, maybe not common, but the most familiar way potentially this happens is when we choose to pick some experience to let our mind rest on. So this choosing the breath, for example, in what we would call concentration practice. What we've been practicing today is mindfulness practice. If we'd been practicing concentration practice, my instructions would have been stay with the breath. If something arises that pulls you away from the breath, let it go and bring your attention back to the breath. So it's cultivating, in concentration practice, we cultivate a stability of mindfulness on one experience, such as the breath. And yet the concentration comes from the continuity of the mindfulness. That is really the definition of concentration, the continuity of the mindfulness. In this case, the continuity of the mindfulness is happening on a single object, a single experience. That kind of concentration, I think that's the kind of, when we say concentration, often that's what we're referring to. I mean, when we talk about it familiarly, can't even say the word. Familiarly. In a familiar way, when we talk about concentration, I think we mean focus. So when I was a kid, for example, I could get really concentrated reading a book. You know, I would open my book and I just, that world would come alive to me. You know, it would be like a mandala. I'd be creating a whole story in my mind, and I was absorbed in that world. And that kind of absorption, where we're absorbed in something and not really aware of things that are happening around us, that's kind of the most familiar way I think we think of concentration, that absorption kind of space. And when I was a kid and I would read these books, you know, I really had that capacity for absorption when I was a kid. My dad would like come up the stairs and say, "Dinner's ready," and I wouldn't hear him. And he'd come up a little closer and speak a little louder and say, "Dinner's ready," and I still wouldn't hear me. Hey, he'd have to actually touch me for me to come out of that world. So it was really kind of that absorption state. So sometimes concentration can have that quality where we are so absorbed in that experience, we do not experience other things. And this can happen with mindfulness of breathing. I'm told it has not happened to me. That you can get so absorbed in, and then the Buddha talked, there were examples of this in the Buddha's day where he was absorbed in mindfulness of breathing, and there was this big hubbub happening outside. I think, you know, some person had been killed by a mad cow or something, and there was a lot of commotion and hubbub, and he came out and started just doing walking meditation, and he's like, "Well, what is all of this about?" They said, "Friend, didn't you hear?" And he said, "No, I didn't hear. I was in meditation. I was absorbed in meditation." So that's possible, that we can, that capacity of mind is possible to cultivate that level of absorption. Now that kind of concentration of absorption in a particular experience like the breath creates very, very wonderful states of mind. And even just the capacity, or even just the depth of concentration I've cultivated around the breath, I've touched on some of the really incredibly pleasant mind states, you know, bliss and rapture and joy and peace and ease, that, you know, the body just starts feeling really easeful. Very little in the way of pain can touch a mind that's got that kind of focus. So it's a very, very pleasant state. that kind of concentration, that absorbed kind of concentration, while it is mindfulness of that object, you know, it's that kind of mindfulness of that experience, let go of anything not the experience. So the meditation becomes very simple kind of mindfulness. All meditations include both concentration and mindfulness. It's just different degrees of it. So in what we would call a concentration practice, there's mindfulness of when you're attending to your chosen object, and then it's either that or not that. So you're aware when you're not attending to the chosen object and you come back. So it's a very simple kind of two-valence kind of mindfulness. You know when you're on the experience and when you're off the experience. And when you're off, you come back. So that kind of concentration tends to lead to that absorption when the mind kind of picks up on some aspect of that experience and absorbs into it. So there's not so much attunement to change in that kind of concentration. And that's a key piece to remember. That it creates beautiful states of mind. It secludes you from difficult states of mind. And that's one of the reasons it feels so good, because when the mind is concentrated, it's secluded from aversion. It's secluded from wanting. It's secluded from sleepiness and dullness and restlessness and doubt. Sometimes the state of concentration is called the bliss of seclusion. It feels really good to not have those states running around in your mind. So it has that quality of being very pleasant, and yet the state is constructed through kind of highlighting something, an unchanging facet of experience, basically a concept around the experience. The concept of breath, the concept of breathing in, breathing out. So this kind of concentration, this absorption kind of concentration produces very lovely states of mind. And yet the state itself does not tend towards the helping us to kind of cut through our confusion and delusion about the world. It takes us to very pleasant spaces and lets us hang out there for a while. But when we come out of that space, basically, we're often in a very similar place where we were before. So the Buddha, in his own exploration of concentration practice, and his whole exploration was around suffering, and is it possible to be free of this suffering? Is that possible? That was his question. That was his quest. And he went out to learn the teachings of the wise people of his day, and concentration was a big part of what was explored in his day. And so he learned concentration. He became completely facile at concentration. He could absorb and into the deepest states of concentration. And when he came out of those states of concentration, he discovered he was still subject to the same kind of suffering. That it hadn't been the solution to his quest to find those states of concentration. It was a peaceful abiding while they lasted, he said, but didn't answer his question. Is it possible to be absolutely free from suffering? He said, yes, we can be temporarily free in these states, but that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for completely free from suffering. And so his own exploration began to emphasize the mindfulness aspect. And this is where the continuity of mindfulness And the concentration that comes with the continuity of mindfulness is, this is where the power of mindfulness comes from. The power of this practice comes from that continuity. And so another way to explore concentration is, rather than absorbing into one object, one experience, is to instead keep that thread of mindful awareness going on changing experience. This can happen in many, many different ways. So, for example, the breath can be used as an object of mindfulness. If you're paying attention to the way the experience of breathing changes while you're attending to it. So noticing all the different sensations of the in-breath and all the different sensations of the out-breath. The attunement to change within our mindfulness is the place where wisdom begins to grow. The wisdom of understanding how it is that we get caught, how it is that we struggle. So much of our struggle comes around basically, you know, imputing a kind of permanence or a kind of belief in the possibility of permanence. I mean, if we don't actually impute permanence to our experience, we think it should be possible to have permanent experience in some way. That, you know, just we latch on to experience, thinking having that experience is where happiness will come from. You know, having a relationship, or getting that particular job, or finally owning my own home, or whatever it is. That there's a way that we put our happiness out on the things of the world, trying to find some kind of stability out there, thinking that finding that stability is where we'll find happiness. But everything in our experience, from cars to jobs to mind states, as the Buddha discovered with his exploration of concentration practice, you know, the story goes, or the I don't know if it's myth or it's common wisdom of the day or whatever, was that some of those very deep states of concentration you could go into and hang out in for 7 days without eating, without sleeping, without urinating, without defecating. Basically, you get so concentrated that your body goes into a state of kind of hibernation. For 7 days you can do that, and then you can come out and continue living. If you go in for longer than that, apparently you would die. But so there's that capacity that the mind has to do that with concentration. And yet that state of concentration, you can hang out in that space for 7 days, apparently a very refined, sublime state of bliss, and yet it ends. Even that is not permanent. Even that is not a reliable place for happiness. And so this whole notion of finding some place where we can land, some place, you know, oh, if I just get this, if I just have that, you know, we may not think that will do it for us for the rest of time, but there is a way that we believe that if we get that thing and then get the next thing and then the next thing and then the next thing, you know, kind of like stringing pearls or something, you know, that's what happiness would be. Kind of like that's the best our minds can come up with, that if we can just string together these experiences of getting what we want and getting rid of what we don't want, that's the best it can be. That's the best happiness possible. And the Buddha discovered or found that that is a form of happiness, as is the concentration a form of happiness, but not the most sublime kind of happiness. And what he discovered, a way to articulate his discovery, I think, I mean, I can't really say what he discovered, but my understanding of what he taught is one way of phrasing it, is that when we can come into alignment with the truth that things change, with the truth that holding on to changing experience as a source of happiness is destined to lead to a sense of loss, when we can come into alignment with that truth and be at ease with changing experience, not fighting changing experience, not trying to continually control and have only pleasant experience and get rid of unpleasant experience, but be aware and kind of in the rhythm, in the flow of the waves of pleasant and unpleasant and experience that comes and goes. That leads to a kind of balance of mind, an ease of mind, a peace of mind with whatever experience is happening. And this doesn't mean that you would then just sit like a lump on the log and go, oh, things as they are, you know, no need to act. I mean, actually, in a way, paradoxically, that opening to that changing flow of experience opens the heart to the heartbreaking reality that, yes, alas, everything is impermanent. Everything will die. Everyone will die. I will die, you will die. There's a kind of a heartbreaking poignancy, an opening to that, that leads to a compassion and a love that we act from. So this opening to this reality of change and the ease with that reality of change doesn't make us just kind of be indifferent to the world. It actually breaks our heart open to the world, breaks our heart open to both the joy and the sorrow of the world. We feel it more deeply. We respond out of compassion. We respond out of joy, out of balance of mind, instead of out of greed, aversion, confusion. And so this meeting of change with mindfulness is how that understanding develops. And so the cultivation of a stability of mindfulness to meet change, This is my understanding of what the Buddha said. This will help to free your mind. This approach. Bring your attention to the present moment. Stabilize your attention in the present moment. Not to say to one thing, but stabilize your attention in the present moment to the changing experience in the present moment. Maybe with the breath, for instance. It could be also just with the river of life. Just knowing, hearing, knowing, seeing, knowing movement, knowing emotions, knowing thoughts. The stability of the mindfulness, as I said before, in that stability of mindfulness, if something arises or begins to arise that has that quality of contraction, the power of that continuous mindfulness starts to allow it to self-liberate. The more continuous the mindfulness, the more powerful it is. And we have been practicing this today, and we see how hard it is. You know, this is not an easy thing to do. It's not like just being told this, you can suddenly flip a switch in your mind and say, oh, well, that sounds good. I'll be mindful continuously. We have to guide our minds and train our minds reminding ourselves of the value of this practice. And seeing also, I mean, one of the ways this practice works is that when we wake up, when our mindfulness returns after having been lost in thought, often caught in some story or some fantasy or some reactive state of mind, when we come back into mindfulness, in that moment, the mind recognizes what's actually valuable. Like me waking up to that anger and recognizing, wow, this is not pleasant here. You know, as opposed to being caught in the story of anger and believing somehow that it was doing something to somebody else. Waking up in mindfulness, this is not helpful for well-being in this being. This does not lead to well-being, this state of mind. That mindfulness allowed that understanding to begin to really take root. Now, even just seeing it once or twice isn't enough either. I mean, we see it over and over again, and yet slowly over time, the mind begins to get it. These states don't help. These states lead us to suffering. These states, states of love, of kindness, of compassion, of joy, lead us towards well-being. And so the exploration of changing experience is what allows us to open to this. Gateway of understanding. And, you know, it may not be that you see once and for all. I mean, like my practice around anger, I worked with anger, this one particular anger, one person I was angry with. I worked with that anger for a couple years, seeing it from different perspectives, watching it come, watching it go, seeing my mind get sucked into it and getting into the whirlpool of it and recognizing, okay, not right now. I guess this is not the time to try to be mindful of it. Over and over again, watching that pattern unfold, the wisdom, the understanding grew very slowly. And yet it did grow. It did actually, in that particular instance, completely uproot that anger at that person. Not even possible for me to think about that person and get angry. It's just not there anymore. So the wisdom, I mean, while I was in the midst of it, it didn't necessarily feel like anything very amazing was happening. And yet, slowly, grain by grain over time, the mindfulness and the awareness began to wear away at that pattern. And this is the power of that continuity of mindfulness. And so that is a form of concentration also. It's got a name. It's called momentary concentration, moment-to-moment concentration. It's a kind of concentration that is cultivated by the stability of awareness. So essentially, we could also say a definition of concentration is undistractability. That we are not able to be pulled out of the present moment by various thoughts. Not lost, able to get lost. So the continuity of awareness, the continuity of awareness can be aware of many changing things, and yet because of that strength of awareness, you know each thing. So, you know, you're sitting here, you're being mindful of just this flow of life, you're with the breath, then there's the sound of a car, and with the continuity of mindfulness, the mind is aware of the sound, and it doesn't get pulled off into thinking about the car. It's just there's sound. And then there's something else that arises, a body sensation or an emotion, a happiness. And there's just this moment-to-moment connecting with what is actually arising in life in this moment. And the mind is not slipping out. So that form of concentration, we could say, is a stability of awareness. That's the first form of concentration I described on one object. The concentration really develops with the object. It's a stabilizing of the experience, a stabilizing of the mind on an experience, the breath. So the awareness gets stable, but it's dependent on that object. It's dependent on that experience. In this other form of concentration, the awareness is stable, but it's not dependent on any other object. It is able to just watch the flow of life happening without getting caught by anything. A pleasant thing arises. We're not caught by wanting to have more of it. An unpleasant thing arises. We're not caught by wanting to get rid of it or push it away. Just, oh, there's pleasant. There's unpleasant. There's a thought. There's a feeling. There's a body sensation. There's a sound. And not pulled out from that stability of awareness. Now, the last piece I'll say, because I've kind of presented them as different things in a way, the first kind of concentration can be a great support for us in our mindfulness practice. There's a couple ways that it can do that, and I'm just briefly going to touch into that because I don't really have time to elaborate so much. But one of the ways that's really helpful is if you have that capacity to settle your mind on one object like that, is it gives you a break when things are challenging. You know, you've got a place to go, a pleasant abiding when there is a struggle happening. It's kind of like a refuge. It's like, wow, this is really challenging. Let me go into that room and give myself a break. So that's one way that it serves us. It can give us a respite from sometimes when we're practicing mindfulness, the suffering, the ache of the heart and the suffering can be kind of overwhelming. And so having a place of refuge from that can be helpful. The other way that kind of concentration serves us. There's descriptions in the suttas about using that kind of concentration to essentially, basically once you get to that level of concentration, the instructions that the Buddha offers for that will turn the mind and lead towards that understanding about the unreliability of experience, is he says, turn the attention towards that state of concentration and notice the impermanent nature of it. So the instruction, having absorbed into a state of concentration, as that concentration begins to fall apart, you notice the impermanence of it. You notice how it falls apart. You can also learn a lot. This is a lot of my understanding and wisdom in my in my own doing of concentration practice. There's also a lot of wisdom that can be gained as the mind creates the state of concentration. So in the place of the mind actually moving towards concentration, the mind is aware of what it's doing and how it's going about this, and so there is a relationship to change. So there are ways that cultivating that kind of stability of concentration can be turned, the mind can be turned towards insight, towards wisdom, towards understanding from that place also. But it takes a kind of a conscious shift, my understanding, it takes a conscious shift to actively open to the unreliable, impermanent nature of even the states of concentration. Yeah. The experience of anger, yes.
And then you will see that that experience will vanish after a while.
When the mindfulness is strong, you do see that. And there's a lot of time. So just to repeat the question for the recording. So the question about turning attention to anger in mindfulness, that when you do that, you see the impermanence of anger, you see it vanish, and you understand the impermanence of it. Yes, when mindfulness gets strong, when there is that continuity of mindfulness, that is what I mean by seeing the anger self-liberate. And, you know, I spent years not seeing the anger self-liberate. Yes, you know, seeing, oh, there's anger, and using a variety of tools to help me be balanced around it. And so that is when the mindfulness gets strong, that happens. Sometimes we have to recognize, okay, yes, there's anger, and right now I need to put my attention on something else because I'm getting sucked into it. So we learn to be skillful around working with the difficult states of mind also. And now we have to stop, unfortunately. So...